Well, we talk a lot about the environment on this program, and often our wetlands come up as a topic. And, so, of course, water. Water is the key to life, and there are so many incredible creatures that live on and near water. And we're going to focus on one type of wetlands for the rest of the program today, our streams. And we are fortunate to have a couple of authors of a wonderful new field guide with us. The field guide is called Field Guide to Wisconsin Streams, Plants, Fishes, Invertebrates, Amphibians, and Reptiles. And the two authors with us today, Katie Songer is a writer, and she's an ecologist, an environmental educator living in Madison, avid naturalist, I think. She worked in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources about 5 years?
That's right.
About 5 years. And you were surveying Wisconsin streams.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a master's degree in soil and water conservation from the UW-Madison. It's great to have you with us today. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
And Ron Dolan with us as well. Ron is an ecologist and educator who has conducted watershed studies and trained citizen volunteers as well in, for monitoring streams at the Wisconsin DNR, a master's degree in water resources management at UW-Madison. And Ron, great to have you with us, too.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Thanks so much. Michael Miller is the other author who is not with us today.
That's right. He's actually surveying a stream today.
Why not? Well, maybe he's got a radio and he's listening in as he collects. We'll find out. Maybe he'll call us. You never know. You can call us if you have a question about streams. What are some great ways that you enjoy Wisconsin streams and really get to observe the complexities of the ecosystem? I'm sure you may have questions about the streams that you frequent or that you have seen. How do we enjoy Wisconsin streams while being good stewards of them? We want to talk about that a little bit as well. Maybe you've got some experiences to share, and if you do, I hope you'll join us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. And certainly if you want to post a photo there, a stream photo, love to see that. Or questions, you could post it right there at The Larry Miller Show. So all those ways you can get a hold of us, and I hope you'll do that. We often have folks on from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. And so we know there are a lot of different types of waterways and wetlands. How do you identify or how do you define a stream for the purposes of this book?
Well, for this book, we decided to define them as wadable streams, which we were out there surveying a lot of streams around the state. So to us, that meant streams that you can wade for most of the year without overtopping your waders or getting swept away.
And you visited a lot of those streams.
That's right.
How many streams do we have here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think we have 22,000 perennial streams in the state, and that number even doubles if you add in intermittent streams.
So that's a heck of a lot of
water.
27,000 streams. How many miles?
86,000 total stream miles in the state. So we're water rich.
Wow. Yeah. So and you've got a pretty comprehensive field guide here, and I was looking at some of the folks who had written in support of it, and one of the people, Steve Boren, is somebody I've had on my show a number of times, who really knows what he's talking about too, and he has very high praise for the book.
Oh, that's wonderful! Yeah, Steve is. We listened to your show with him talking about trout streams recently, and that the trout anglers are one of the groups that we were hoping would be able to use this book.
Yeah, I would think there'd be a lot of them who would be would make good use of the book. Pretty comprehensive and thorough. How'd you put it together? Start with you, Ron Dolan.
Oh, sure. I'll add to that. Steve Bourne, by the way, said in his last program with you that streams were one of the most spiritual places he could think of. Well, I'd like to add to that definition. I like to think of streams as the soul of the landscape. They're this fragile, constantly changing ecosystem, and they reflect exactly how there's changes in climate or changes in land use in the watersheds where water drains into those streams.
Yeah.
So how did it get put together, this book on Field Guide to Wisconsin Streams? Well, this was a long four-year process. I mean, it started, Katie and I were both on stream survey crews for a few years, and at some point, Mike Miller actually came up with the idea for a fish pamphlet so to better identify fish. And because, as you know, there's 120 species and streams just in this book, and that's all the species and streams. Well, pretty soon we decided not just for fish surveys, but for volunteers through programs like the Water Action Volunteer Program. Volunteers and stream surveys could even go be early detectors for aquatic invasive species such as plants or zebra mussels. And pretty soon, the three of us, Mike, Katie, and myself, started putting together a full-blown book that covers fishes, plants, amphibians and reptiles, and invertebrates.
And along with a lot of great photography. Again, I was talking earlier with Art Evans about his book on beetles with this outstanding photography, and you have wonderful photography. I just opened it up to any page here, and we've got smooth mussels that are. You've got wonderful photography, wonderful photos of all of these mussels. I didn't realize there were that many.
Yeah, there's 50 mussels, 50 native mussels in Wisconsin, and the photography. That's a really good thing to mention because it touches on how many people contributed to this book. Some field guides, the authors were the photographers, but in our case, we were collecting photos from dozens and dozens of people, not only in Wisconsin, but in Florida, sometimes in other continents in the case of invasive species. And that took a lot of work, and it's just a very collaborative effort. This book is the combination of the wisdom of many experts who've spent decades collecting their knowledge and their photos.
And the fact is, you've got the invasives. It's not just the natives in here, but also those invasives that some of them are pretty nasty ones.
<That's right.
laughs> Nasty guys.
Yeah, when you put in invasive species, like we started putting in invasive plants, such as reed canary grass, well, pretty soon you find yourself having to put in the native lookalikes. So if you're going to have invasives, you're going to have to know what looks like them so people don't misidentify those invasive plants.
Okay. Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating what you've got here. So we've got plants, we got invertebrates, we've got crayfish, mussels, and clams. Well, let's see, fish, amphibians, and reptiles. All that in this book, and I like the size of it.
Yeah, that's the goal of the book was to be a one-stop shop. We wanted it to be able to possibly fit in a waiter pocket if you're lucky, but at least to be a book that would be lightweight, where you could identify pretty much anything you would see in a stream and not have to lug around a whole bunch of different books.
And I pretty much, if you take this with you to a Wisconsin stream and you see something, you're going to be able to find it in this book.
Yeah, you're pretty covered. I mean, if you still cannot find the correct identity of a certain fish species, yeah, you'll need George Becker's Fishes of Wisconsin, 1,000-page tome. But that's not something you want to lug around streams with. And also, there's John Lyons' whiskfish.org website, which also has a lot of great information on identifying fish. But some of these, you actually need to cut open the fish in a lab, look at the gills. These are things that you need a laptop, microscope possibly. We got it down to just the essentials. If you still can't identify a species, take a sample, at least if you're from the DNR. If you're a layperson and you're unsure if it's an invasive, I'd say leave it.
That was with the help of those two people that Ron mentioned, by the way. John Lyons was the primary author of our fish section, so people like him contributed these different sections of the book and helped us make it a one-stop shop.
Katie Songer and Ron Dolan, our guests today, two of the authors of Field Guide to Wisconsin Streams. Great to have them here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I had a caller wondering about salamanders. Are they making a comeback? We used to see them all the time. Then they seemed to go away. And now it seems like we're seeing them a little bit more again. So what do you think?
That's a good question. We actually had some other DNR folks author the reptiles and amphibians section. I can't speak to the caller's question, but I can say we have a couple really cool salamanders in our book, common mud puppy being one of them. Mm-hmm. And it kind of displays the interactivity between different species. Common mud puppy is a special concern species. It's the largest Wisconsin salamander. It's over a foot long when it's an adult, which is huge. And it's completely aquatic, the only totally aquatic salamander in the state. And it has big, bushy gills to breathe oxygen through the water, just like a fish would. And it actually is very connected to the salamander mussel, which is a threatened mussel species. And the common mud puppy is the only host to the young of salamander mussels, which when they're in their larval stage or young stage, they're kind of parasitic on the gills of fish or salamanders. Katie can talk more about the mussels if she wants, but it's known that the common mud puppy is the only host, and if the common mud puppy goes extinct or is extirpated in Wisconsin, well, so goes the salamander mussels.
Oh.
So it's really a complex ecosystem that is interconnected.
We have Dave and Augusta up next with a question or a comment. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Hello, Larry. I was up north of the Chippewa Flowage this past week, muskie fishing, had some flat tires on my boat trailer, so I decided to take a break alongside the headwaters of the Chippewa River, and I seen a northern water snake came out from the side of the river. It was swimming in front of me and swerved out. It was going away from me, and behind that, about 2 feet behind it, was a muskie. I thought the water was probably only about four feet deep at the very most, very small part of the river. I thought that was just a cool thing to see, and I wish I would have had more time to spend along the river.
That's a great story. Have you guys seen anything like that?
Yeah, actually, that reminds me, and I'm sure Ron, too, of we saw something similar at Black Earth Creek. There's a water snake at least a couple years ago that would hang out there and jump off the bank into the water every time we would do these workshops there with students, and it was such a crowd pleaser. The students just loved it. They begged us to catch the snake in our net. They wanted to touch it. We wouldn't let them. Snakes are very charismatic and often misunderstood.
And interesting to see a muskie following it up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dave, thanks a lot for that story. We're visiting with Katie Songer and Ron Dolan today, author of The Field Guide to Wisconsin Streams. News coming up now, but they'll be back and with us right up till 12:30. So you stay with us. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. So happy to have you along today as we take a look at our Wisconsin streams. We're filled with incredible natural areas to enjoy. We have fascinating wildlife to observe. I'm guessing that inch per inch, it's hard to top the diversity that you're going to find in a Wisconsin stream. And Ron Dolan and Katie Songer, among two of the three, Michael Miller is the third one, put together a field guide. It's a field guide to Wisconsin streams, plants, fishes, invertebrates, amphibians, and reptiles. It's a wonderful book, complete with great photos of all of these various species. And I'm inviting you to join in. Maybe you have some questions about those species that inhabit our streams. Maybe you've got an experience to share. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Eric and Lindsay has a question, but just Eric, hang on there. Just before we get to you, I want to respond to Alice from Sheboygan, who says, how do we get this field guide? It sounds wonderful. And, you know, any of your local bookstores are going to offer it, I'm sure.
That's right. Also, the University of Wisconsin Press, the publisher, has a link to it on their page.
Yeah, so it's you're gonna find it. Go to your local bookstore and they'll order it for you, or you can go online and order it as well. So that's for Alice or anybody else. You guys probably aren't doing book signings.
We had an informal one with the DNR, but you know, if somebody brings one up to us, I'm not opposed.
Okay, all right. So you're willing. You're willing to do that. Eric and Lindsay has that question for you, so let's go to Eric. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Larry. Love your show.
Thank you.
Yeah, Katie and Ron, my dad and I, we've really bonded over the trout stream for years, and your guide sounds just wonderful. It's a definite must-get for both of our wader pockets. One thing we've noticed is in our years of fishing is there's a lot more invasive plant life that's come along to the streams, and I think some of it's from wader bottoms and whatnot. What is the efficacy of, if we see like teasel or something like that, can we yank it out? And it sounds like your book will help us identify these invasives along the trout stream. Thanks so much for taking my call today.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Ron, we'll turn to you.
Sure. I mean, there is just basic ethics. I mean, you want to clean your waders and gear off after you walk out of the stream. Don't carry little hitchhikers off to another watershed, particularly within a few days when they're still wet, because there's a lot of invasive plants that just one small particle, one fragment of that plant, can re-sprout and colonize in another watershed. But also, at the DNR, we tended to be agent zeros, or you know, the vectors for a lot of potential invasives, because we jumped around all around the state in a given week when we were doing stream surveys. So we cleaned off our equipment and waders with 10% bleach solution. I mean, you can just get a little spray bottle, whatever you need, and that helps cover little potential invasives that you don't even see. In terms of invasive plants, yes, there's a lot of invasive plants, but if you see something like just a couple invasives like teasel, sure, pull it out. But if you see, you know, a whole stand, you know, as far as I can see, of reed canary grass, well, that's a little different. But when you use this book, we have every invasive, let me see here. I'll just pull it out. We have every invasive prohibited plant species in the state. And that means it's either not yet introduced to Wisconsin, or it's just recently been introduced in a few places. If you see that, by all means,
jerk it out.
Pull it out and take a picture. I wouldn't say carry it around with you necessarily unless you're very careful, but report it to the Department of Natural Resources right away.
Wonderful.
All right.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks, Eric. Appreciate your call. I want to give Bob in Oconomowoc a chance to join in. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm driving, so thank you very much. First of all, thank you to the authors of the book. It's wonderful to be back in Wisconsin. But my question is, because the premise is we have public access to Wisconsin streams based on some law from the 1800s. In Colorado, which I just went to for fishing, it's a whole different world. And so I'm a little bit, like, worried. Are there any legal challenges to the public access of Wisconsin streams? You know, are they coming, or is there anything that we have to be especially careful of? Because in Colorado, I try to go fishing in some little stream, and people shoot me.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I'm not sure if there are any upcoming challenges to the law. In Wisconsin, the law is that the public has access to flowing water. You're technically allowed to walk, I believe, any stream in the state. Although, of course, there is definitely an ethical obligation to be sensitive to the landowners whose land is around that stream. We were very conscientious of this when doing our stream surveys. We didn't like just tromping through somebody's stream that's running through their land. We always tried to get permission first, and people are usually very amenable to that, especially if you ask. So it is something really fortunate that we have here in Wisconsin, that we are allowed to do that, and we need to treat each other respectfully to be able to keep it that way.
Yeah. I don't know of any, I'm not hearing about any effort to change the laws on that.
No.
So I think we're good for now, Bob, but like you, I will certainly keep an eye out for that, because I think it's one of our great one of the great rules we have here in this state, allowing us to do those things. Bob, thank you. Andy and Banger, your turn. Hi, Andy.
Hi there. I have a question about, what's the difference? You mentioned there are 50 different types of mussels or something like that. What's the difference between a mussel and a clam?
All right. Who wants it? Katie, you want to take that one?
Sure, I'll take that one. We've been wanting to talk about mussels on this show. So there is a taxonomic difference between mussels and clams, but the main way you can tell them apart is that mussels are asymmetrical. You can picture, a lot of people can picture mussels that you might find in the ocean, I think, that are usually dark and elongated, and clams are more symmetrical. And in Wisconsin, there are 50 species of native mussel and 40 species of native clam. But all of those clams are so tiny that in our book we just grouped them into one category of fingernail clams. They're hard to tell apart because they're so small. It's also confusing because the word clam is sometimes casually applied to mussels, but there is a difference. Mussels are fascinating. The author of our mussel section, Lisi Kitchell, taught Ron and me this, and we wanted to pass it on. We know she's been on this show too. They have a fascinating life cycle. When the female's eggs are fertilized, she lures in a fish to use to grow her fertilized eggs into adults. And the lures that she uses for this can be very elaborate. They can look like minnows or invertebrates. She lures a fish in. It's a specific host fish, a specific species that she needs, releases her fertilized eggs into the gills of the fish. And those eggs latch on and grow their internal organs for a few weeks while riding along inside the fish and dispersing. Then they release themselves and burrow into the sand and live for decades. So this is a way that the stream web of life is very intricately connected. If the fish species disappears, its dependent mussel species disappear as well. Mussels are 50% of Wisconsin's native mussels are endangered or threatened or special concern. So it's a very, very important, interesting type of animal.
And all those mussels, as a kid, I thought those were all clams.
Yeah.
In the creeks and streams that I played in.
Yeah.
As a kid, we always called them, well, those were clams, but they're really...
They're mussels.
Mussels.
Yeah.
You know, thanks, Andy, a lot for calling. And, you know, you mentioned defensive techniques and so forth. They're... I think one of the most fascinating creatures that falls under this invertebrate category are the caddisflies.
Yes.
And the caddisflies have really a unique defensive technique that you talk about in the book.
Yeah. Caddisflies are pretty much the quintessential invertebrate or spineless creature in Wisconsin streams. In most streams in Wisconsin, at least that are semi-healthy, you can pick up any rock and you can look and you're going to find some sort of case or net under there. There's a whole teeming metropolis on every rock you pick up in many streams. It's a whole different underwater world down there. And caddisflies build cases and nets made out of silk. They spin their own silk because they're related to butterflies. And they also attach to rocks or hard surfaces with that silk as well. And you can actually identify caddisflies by their cases because every individual of a family is going to have the same type of case. For instance, chimney case maker caddisflies, they have four-sided cases that are elongated. And if you looked at them in a cross-section, it'd look like a square. And it's built out of vegetation.
Yeah.
And then there's the... Compare that to the saddle case maker, which it looks like it's built a tortoise shell out of small gravel and sand. And then, of course, there's net spinning caddisflies, which are the most common caddisfly statewide, which build nets and collect floating debris from the water column as filter feeders.
That is so cool. They sort of grab that stuff and pull it around them.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that basically that's what they do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. Also, it touches on this interesting thing where a lot of people don't realize how long the insects they see have lived underwater in a previous life stage. So, like, many anglers are familiar with caddisflies. They might use caddisfly flies to catch trout,
mm-hmm.
and they see the flies, flitting along on top of the water, looking like moths. But what they don't realize is that those caddises, they may live for, say, a month as an adult that we see, but they've lived for a year or two underwater in a completely different life stage that we don't see. So that adult phase is just kind of almost their last breath of life.
Ah, but we do see the phases in your book.
Yes.
We do.
You have some great photos of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. Just look at those caddisflies. That is a fascinating creature, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Andy in Mount Horeb, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to tell you that I just ordered the book this morning.
Oh, cool.
Wonderful.
And I've heard Mike Miller do quite a few presentations. But anyway, I have some northern water snake stories. I was trout fishing on Tipperary Creek, about 10 or 15 miles south of Madison a number of years ago. And as I was going, it was early in the year, and I was going down the stream, I saw a snake in a tree.
Mm.
And I walked a little further, and I saw two snakes in a tree. And I went a little further, and I saw a bunch of snakes in a tree, and I said, that's enough, I'm out of here. and they were northern water snakes, and from what I understand, they get out of the water to mate in the spring. That's what I've been told. And the other story I have is we were fishing on the Menominee River, the border river between Wisconsin and the UP last summer, and we were floating down in our inflatable pontoon boats because we were in a pretty section with a lot of rapids. And one of the fellows I was fishing with, I yelled at him. I said, hey, Bob, there's a snake coming at you. And it was coming right toward his pontoon boat. And he was flailing the water with his fly rod. And it was just really a funny situation for him. So, but anyway, those are my northern water snake stories.
Oh, those are great stories. Thanks, Andy. You guys probably, I know you have some stories. Ron, you did a quick exit from one of the streams, didn't you?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I was 15 years ago. I was working up in northern Wisconsin in a lake, and I saw this huge monstrosity of a snake meandering towards me. And I must have been out of that water in a half a second. Couldn't believe it. But a lot of people have that natural fear of snakes. I know I do. And a lot of people look at northern water snakes and think, water moccasin. Well, luckily, we don't have water moccasins within hundreds and hundreds of miles of Wisconsin. So northern water snakes don't like to eat humans. They like to eat amphibians and crayfishes and small fish.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, if you see a snake in a stream, don't worry. If you're in Wisconsin, you're perfectly safe.
Here's a total aside. I was in Trinidad looking to find the scarlet ibis, that bird is a really beautiful bird, and we were going through this waterway and the overhanging trees, and there was a large green snake that was hanging in the tree and dropped into our boat, which created quite a little stir until we got him out. But you're right. It's like, oh, boy, he looks like he might drop into the – oops, he's into the boat. Joe in Ironwood, Michigan, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi. You indicated that you could almost walk any stream in Wisconsin. But on the other hand, in the trout regulations, Wisconsin, public or private, how do I know if I'm trespassing? And they go on to use navigability, determining whether a waterway is public or private. And, of course, they describe navigability. So once you're on that waterway, you can keep your feet wet. You're in the stream. You can do anything you want. So how do you define the navigability part where it is public or private, but you're saying you can walk anything? Or any stream.
Well, as soon as your feet are wet,
same way.
as soon as your feet are wet, you're standing on strong legal ground. In terms of public land around it, there's often conservation easements around streams. In most cases, you can walk, let's say, a canoe length from the stream itself, and you're fine. But if it might be private land, you want to keep your feet wet as much as possible.
Yeah, 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 definitely. Yeah. But once your feet are wet, you're on. Yeah, it's funny to say, but you're on solid ground when your feet are wet. that's the way to put it. Oh, thanks, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling. With John from Northeast Iowa. Says, I have the book. It's great. Is there a program to stock streams with little fish like darters, or can I buy them to restock a stream near me?
Oh, that sounds like a good question for a DNR fish biologist. I don't know of any fish stocking programs for things other than game fishes. There may be such programs, but I would ask your local DNR biologist. That is an interesting subject, though. Something to note is that when Ron and I were doing these fish surveys around the state, we were stunned to find that not a single stream we surveyed had zero fish in it. Every stream had at least something. One fish. Even if it was the most degraded little mud puddle, it would have at least a brook stickleback, just a little few-inch-long, spiny fish that's very tolerant of degradation. And something neat just to keep in mind about streams is that it's not all about the game fishes. There's all these wonderful darters and minnows under the water that we don't often see.
Yeah, and they're pretty little fish. And you've got pictures of photos of all of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Every one of them. We had, let's see, Klinka emailed us and said, great show, would you please ask about the loss of large frogs on the western shore of the Bay of Green Bay. That's a little out of your area. They're almost non-existent now. Mm. So we might have to take a pass on that, Ron.
I could mention more about little fishes. Yeah, game fish get all, like trout, get all the publicity. But really, if you've ever seen a rainbow darter, for instance, especially a breeding male rainbow darter, it has flamboyant green and orange stripes all over its body to try to attract females. It's like one of those tropical birds, like birds of paradise. But we've got them right here in Wisconsin streams in miniature as small fish.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, so many little fishes we don't even think about that you'll never catch with a hook because they're too small. Like, they have mating rituals, such as the Johnny Darter. It's this little perch, essentially. It's in the perch mm-hmm. family. And it's really plain looking. It's kind of tan with dark markings like X, Y, and W on its sides.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll spawn under rocks and logs, and the male fish will attack each other for dominance. Usually, size wins. But also, they'll like bite each other's fins, butt heads, and then they'll protect like the underside of rocks or logs for like a little tiny space that they can breed on, and they'll attract females, and they'll do a little dance. The males, while he's guarding the nest, he'll run out and see whoever's near there, even if it's a fish three or four times its size, try to scare it away. But if it's a female, it'll run up, and then it'll return to underneath the rock with a little upside down swimming to attract the female in. And as she approaches, if she swims upside down, or if she does a little herky jerky movement, the male will know, hey, this lady wants to mate. And then she'll enter the spot that he's cleaned off with his fin, scraped off all the sand and particles, and they'll mate. She'll lay a few eggs at a time, and right side by side, he'll go over the eggs and fertilize them.
Oh, man. It's a fascinating world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those streams?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I'm really enjoying the book, and you're going to learn a lot of that sort of that little tidbits like that. You're going to learn a lot of that right in this book.
Yeah. Can I say something about frogs since that caller was asking about them?
Yeah, you can. You got about 30 seconds.
All right. Frogs are a great example of how streams are connected to the land around them. They are amphibians, which means they use the water and the land. And when you're thinking about streams, it's important to realize they're not just columns of water moving across the land. They're connected to the landscape, the watershed. What we do in that watershed affects streams very, very strongly. So that the frogs are indicators of that, and they're often impacted very strongly by land use changes and changes to streams.
And if you want to see every single frog that lives in a stream in Wisconsin, or at least the species, you can find it right here in the Field Guide to Wisconsin Streams. Hey, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. I'm sure our listeners did too. By the way, I've got a link to on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to the book as well. Field Guide to Wisconsin Streams. And two of the authors, Ron Dolan and Katie Songer, are guests today. And thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Larry.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening. And you stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.